Good morning to everyone. Our first case this morning is State v. Lyle J. Carman. Justice Stacy is recused from this matter. Judge Inbody from the Court of Appeals will be sitting. Mr. Krieger, good morning to you, and you may approach and proceed.
Thank you. Please, the Court. My name is Bob Krieger. I represent Lyle Carman. Mr. Carman was convicted of unlawful act of manslaughter under Section 28-305 arising from a traffic accident. Carman's vehicle struck the rear of the victim's vehicle in a construction zone while they were driving on the interstate. The victim died from injuries resulting from that collision. The state alleged that Mr. Carman's unlawful acts to support the manslaughter charge was that he was operating the motor vehicle while under the influence of alcohol or drugs, driving recklessly, driving carelessly, and then they added two traffic infraction offenses of following too closely and driving too fast for conditions. Following a bench trial, the trial court acquitted Mr. Carman of the DUI, the reckless drive, and the careless driving, but did find him guilty of driving too fast for conditions and following too closely. On appeal, Carman argues that the evidence in this case was insufficient as a matter of law to convict him of either of the infraction offenses. He argues that if the evidence is sufficient to support those offenses are not sufficient offenses under statutory and constitutional law to support a felony conviction, in this case, manslaughter. If my research is correct, I believe that this case presents really two matters of first impression, and if not actually matters of first impression, matters that require this court to look back on the history of the case law involving this interaction or overlap between manslaughter and motor vehicle homicide, and to tell us whether the legislature's enactment of the new version of 28-306 in 2011 trumps all the prior case law that existed prior to it. The second matter of first impression, as far as I can tell, is that whether under any theory this court has ever held that an infraction offense can support a felony conviction for manslaughter as the predicate unlawful act.
Well, hasn't this issue been present for some time? Didn't we get to it partially in State versus Wright, in which we ultimately said that if it's there's a perceived unfairness which allows someone to be convicted under the manslaughter statute as opposed to motor vehicle statute, that remedy lies with the legislature?
The legislature remedied it.
And
it's a matter for this court with all to catch up to where the legislature has been. I argued the Burnett case.
What did the legislature do to remedy that?
The legislature, if you look at what I'll call the tortured history of how we got to those cases and what the issues were in those cases, none of the issues present in this case was present in Wright or any of the prior decisions. This case asks a fundamentally new question, and that is, now that we have a statute that specifically says if you do this act, it's this offense. If you do that act, it's this penalty. There is now a specific statute.
Well, couldn't the legislature have said that unlawful or unintentional killings while operating a motor vehicle shall be prosecuted under this section of the law, as opposed to bringing an action for manslaughter, where that's simply an unlawful or unintentional killing while in commission of an unlawful act?
Judge, I've been trying to figure out what the legislature does.
Well, we are trying to do that too, but
honestly, the legislature—it's not in the record. I was on the commission that dealt with this issue. There was a special select committee that preceded the adoption of 2011. You can look at the legislative history of it. This tension that you call it—this is what the court calls it—is not the result of any planned action by the legislature. You can't find any legislative history that the legislature ever said that misdemeanor motor vehicle homicide was coextensive with manslaughter. That was a court decision that said that, and we lived with it since Burnett. That whether that decision is right or wrong, it existed because neither manslaughter or motor vehicle homicide ever identified an unlawful act that applied.
Have they done that now, you think?
I believe so. I believe if you look at 306, it is unified. It starts off with offenses that are misdemeanors and ends up with Class 2 felonies. There isn't any reason to go to manslaughter because when I argued Burnett, it was either misdemeanor motor vehicle homicide or manslaughter. And if I was right, which you said I was not, they could never be charged with a felony offense if they killed somebody while driving a car. Now, that may have been a legislative determination that needed to be made.
Unless they brought it under manslaughter.
What I suggested then, and I think I was more right than I am wrong, that the problem is that the legislature, the only time it ever pronounced a penalty for manslaughter arising out of an operation of a motor vehicle, it was a Class 2 misdemeanor. And that was in 39-66.
Is that per
the year? Only time the legislature has said anything about what the penalty for motor vehicle homicide should be when it's a manslaughter, they said it was a misdemeanor. From that point on, it's been this court that has tried to fill in the blanks. Was it impliedly repealed by the model penal code when it was adopted? All these cases have been an attempt to figure out what the legislature intended, because they never spoke on the motor vehicle homicide. There was never a statute that defined motor vehicle homicide. I suggest now they have. That's only one part.
What are they saying?
They're saying that if it's a regular misdemeanor, if it's just an unlawful act, it's a Class 1 misdemeanor. If it's reckless driving...
You're addressing the predicate.
Yes, they identify reckless driving, driving while under the influence. It is no longer a guess as to what the legislature thought. They have specifically said, for this offense... And it's not just a misdemeanor. It is a felony, which is really leading me to the most important part of the case. I could lose that argument. You could say the legislature hasn't fixed a thing. I think that would be a mistake, but you could say that. The question that remains in this case is the only offense that the court found him guilty of was an infraction offense.
Do you think that's a due process claim?
It's a constitutional claim. It's a statutory claim first, Judge, with all due respect. You have never said that an infraction... is sufficient unlawful act to support a felony manslaughter conviction. You forecast this decision in Perina, in which this exact argument was made at the misdemeanor level, and you said, essentially, well, these are just misdemeanors. They're not felonies. So we don't have to have a culpability.
Well, really, Perina was really kind of a case of telling you how to interpret a statute, wasn't it? Relying on the U.S. Supreme Court case.
No, I disagree. It was a specific constitutional challenge to the unlawful act used to support the conviction in Perina, which was not a crime in which the criminal intent was self-evident.
Well, did the court reach your constitutional challenge here?
I don't know that it did or it didn't. It just basically noted that these are regulatory public welfare offenses. This is just a misdemeanor. We don't have a Morissette issue. So it upheld the conviction.
I beg your pardon, which was a misdemeanor.
Yes, they were in the misdemeanor arena making this same argument that I'm making now.
I'm talking about your case. Did the court reach the issue in this case, in your case?
Well, it had to, because it was raised and addressed, and he found that the evidence was sufficient to support it.
So by implication, then by not finding the statute unconstitutionally, impliedly found it to be constitutional.
You
raised it in the lower court.
It's not that the statute is unconstitutional. There's nothing unconstitutional about the statute. What's unconstitutional is the selection of the unlawful act that's an infraction offense to be the predicate unlawful act for purposes of a manslaughter conviction. You said in Perina, I read it, that that's okay for the misdemeanor version of the offense.
Well, we didn't go any farther than that. If we addressed it, I didn't see that.
Well, that was the argument that was being made at the time, is that you can't just use any offense, even for the misdemeanor, because there are constitutional due process limitations on that. So for the reasons we've articulated, we think that once he was acquitted of the serious offenses, once the reckless drive, careless drive, the felony version of these offenses were gone, the trial court had no choice but to find him not guilty, because that's the theory the prosecution picked.
Well, what about State versus Huff, where the person pled to one offense and then he pled to manslaughter, and then the state proceeded to try him on the motor vehicle homicide case, and we said you could do that.
I can't be responsible for the arguments or issues raised by other lawyers in other cases, but I doubt seriously that this argument was presented.
Is yours is an as-applied?
Yes, totally as-applied, because before my time runs out, I can actually tell you as a defense lawyer, if my guy is guilty of the underlying DUI or a more serious challenge, I might prefer the prosecutor file the manslaughter charges because there may not be a license suspension involved and there are no lesser included offenses. But that would be under the theory that it would be a felony under either statute, either a 306, it would be a Class 3 felony, under 305, it would be a Class 3 felony. If they chose manslaughter, I might prefer that. So it's clearly as applied. Once Mr. Carman was acquitted of the three serious offenses, the issue presented itself. That issue wasn't present and isn't present if he's convicted of the DUI or the reckless driving.
And these offenses have no mens rea.
These are up to $300 fines or something. They're provided in statute as essentially infraction offenses.
And no prison or jail.
No jail time. No anything. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Liss, good morning.
Good morning. May it please the court. Liss, appearing on behalf of the appellate in the state of Nebraska. There are three issues here. Applicability of the manslaughter statute, the constitutionality of the manslaughter statute, and the sufficiency of the evidence. Time permits, I'll address all three issues. As far as the first issue, the applicability of the manslaughter statute, the issue here is whether the state was entitled to charge Mr. Carman with manslaughter rather than homicide. We maintain that the answer is yes, given that it's well established that where a single act violates more than one statute, the state's free to prosecute under any statute it chooses, as long as that decision is not based on race, religion, or some improper classification. This court has adopted and applied that rationale on multiple occasions, including this exact scenario where the state elected to proceed on manslaughter rather than motor vehicle homicide. Set forth in a brief, we have an entire line of case law dealing with that exact issue, and that case law makes it clear that the state has a choice. The most recent decision in that line of cases is the Wright decision from 2001. As Justice Wright alluded to, this court revisited Wright and State v. Huff in 2009, in which this court reiterated that where death results unintentionally from the operation of a motor vehicle, the prosecutor is free to choose whether to charge motor vehicle homicide or manslaughter, notwithstanding the fact that it's substantially different.
What about the legislative changes that Mr. Krieger has referred to? Does that change anything?
I don't believe we have legislative action or inaction that changes anything here, Your Honor. The legislature was obviously aware of this authority back when it repealed the statute that made motor vehicle homicide and manslaughter result of operating a motor vehicle misdemeanor.
The penalty?
They repealed the penalty statute in 86, the same year that Roth was decided. The issue was obviously on the radar, given that they went in and repealed that statute, yet they did nothing to indicate that motor vehicle homicide from that point on should be the sole offense or the only offense that applies.
What's the meaning of the 2011 stuff?
As far as the 2011 amendment, I think since those decisions, since Wright and Huff, that's probably the only meaningful amendment that has been made, but we would submit that amendment votes in our favor. The 2011 amendment, which was drafted by our office in response to the Huff case, provides that the crime of motor vehicle homicide shall be treated as a separate and distinct offense from any other offense arising out of the acts alleged. This amendment does the exact opposite of what the appellant suggests. It establishes that post-Huff, a defendant can simultaneously be prosecuted for both manslaughter and motor vehicle homicide.
Yeah, and I'm not sure what that case tells us, because when you go to sentencing then, you may have a double jeopardy issue that would throw one of those convictions out.
You may.
We haven't decided that.
No, but the issue is whether the state can proceed.
But you think that Huff stands for the proposition that these are two separate and distinct offenses, and therefore the prosecution has discretion in which to elect which statute to proceed under against the defendant who's involved in a motor vehicle accident that kills someone unintentionally.
Correct. I think Huff undoubtedly reaffirmed that principle, and I think the 2011 amendment reaffirms that principle as well. I think the legislative action in 2011 supports the fact that these are clearly states.
But is there some perceived unfairness with doing this if you're driving a car and it has to be an infraction that is a proximate cause of the unintentional killing? I mean, driving without your registration or your driver's license certainly wouldn't support the conviction for manslaughter under those cases.
Right.
But these are non-intent crimes, aren't they?
Some of them
are non-intent, unlawful acts. I mean, driving too fast for the circumstances in a construction zone where he's under the speed limit, which is 55, and there's no evidence that he's going that speed, maybe 45 to 50, and the stop and go with the traffic, and he may have looked for a fraction to see who's behind him in a rearview mirror, and in that fraction, the deceased unfortunately stopped or slowed down in front of him, and he ran into her. There's no intent there, is there?
Well,
I mean, as opposed to driving while you're intoxicated or willful reckless or that sort of thing, where, you know, there's a mens rea in those things. But this is a mere traffic infraction that doesn't contain a mens rea. Don't you need a mens rea in a manslaughter case?
That goes to the constitutionality argument. I'll just jump to that. We would submit that, as set forth in our brief,
you would agree it's properly before the court, even though the court didn't directly rule on it.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's our position, as set forth in the brief, that the manslaughter statute's not strict liability. So while those offenses in and of themselves may not require mens rea, negligence is still required. I think our case law makes that clear, that manslaughter requires an element of negligence or a component of negligence. And the appellant's pointed to no authority, and I'm aware of none, which says that it's unconstitutional to criminalize negligence. To the contrary, as both this court and the Supreme Court have explained, it's the province of the state to define the elements of its crimes, including mens rea, and lawmakers have wide latitude to exclude elements of knowledge and diligence from its definition.
Well, but where did the legislature say that it was that mens rea wasn't a necessary element in a motor vehicle homicide case if you're going to, or unintentional killing, if you're going to prosecute under manslaughter? Where did the legislature say that an element of intent is not necessary in prosecuting under that section for manslaughter?
Well, it didn't specify that a particular intent is required. I mean, broadly states that if you cause the death of someone unintentionally, in the commission of an unlawful act, you're guilty. And, I mean, the legislature is obviously aware of the fact that we have an entire line of case law studying that at least negligence is required.
What if the person were texting? Would that be sufficient to sustain a manslaughter conviction if it caused the death of another while you're taking a call on your cell phone and distracted for a minute? Or you got a kid in the back seat that throws up and you look back there to see and you get charged with manslaughter because you were not paying attention to the road, or you happen to, you know, cross the center lane or cross the shoulder or something like that, a moment's in it, and that would be negligence, I suppose, because you're not watching for the traffic in front of you. Would that be, is that fair?
If the unlawful act causes the death of another, it would be legally allowed, whether it's fair or unfair.
You don't have to prove that they intentionally committed that unlawful act.
No.
I know I've hammered you pretty hard. I know I've hammered you pretty hard on that.
It's fine. It's a fair question. I'd say once, but I mean, the statute itself says unintentionally. And I think, given that our case law requires at least negligence, the legislature could have responded at any point since then if they felt that's not enough. We need something more. We need at least recklessness. They could have responded.
Is your strongest argument that the legislature left the discretion to the prosecutor to determine which statute under which to bring the action?
Absolutely, yes.
Counsel, I'm trying to think of a situation where you could have someone charged with a felony when the underlying act is not at least a misdemeanor. Can you tell me any other case or any other situation where this would come up? Because this is an infraction. It's not a misdemeanor.
Right.
Because every situation that I can think of, there has to be a mens rea, or there has to be something that's an intentional doing, or this is the only situation I can think of that has this particular wording. Can you think of any?
None come to mind, Your Honor. I would imagine there probably are some other traffic violations that don't require a particular mens rea or intent that could qualify.
Well, but that would be under the same section. I mean, it would be under the same statute that you're referring to.
Maybe I don't understand the question.
Is there any other situation? Like, for example, if you have someone who gets shot in a robbery, the person can be charged with murder if the person dies, even though they didn't intend to kill them, because it was in the commission of a felony. So those types of situations, you know, always require, in my thinking, situations where you're doing something that's an unlawful act that is sure. more than just an infraction.
I see where you're going now. And I think that's where our prior line of case law comes in and says we need at least negligence, because if we're dealing with a situation where all we have is a mere traffic violation that carries no culpability whatsoever, no mens rea, we need more. We need at least negligence, in which case we have culpability. And so I think that's where that case law comes into play.
You're saying the level of intention embodied in negligence is sufficient for the predicate to support a felony.
Exactly. I think that's what the case law says and requires, which is why it's sufficient.
And notwithstanding the 2011 list, the amendments that are in 2011.
Correct. I'm out of time here, so I'll submit the matter of sufficiency unless the court has any questions. There are no questions, so further questions we ask that you refer. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do we have time for rebuttal? There is no time for rebuttal. We will go on then to the next case of the day, which is State versus Gregory M. Muscia. Judge Inbody will not be sitting on this case, nor will Justice Stacy. And this is a petition.